Good morning, good morning, good morning. You've tuned into the KRFY Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. Broadcasting from the Tiki Room in downtown Sandpoint, Idaho, it's the Morning Show with Jack and Carrie this Thursday morning, Thursday, February the 2nd. Good morning, Carrie. How are
you? Good morning, Jack. I'm doing good.
Good.
How about you?
Well, pretty good. A little chilly. And speaking of hitch, let's talk a little bit about the weather. It is currently 16 degrees Fahrenheit outside, but with that wind chill, a wind of 14 miles an hour coming out of the northeast, it feels like it's about 2 degrees Fahrenheit. And that seems right to me. My hands were a little chilly.
It is cold, definitely cold.
Sunny today with a high near 28 degrees. Wind chill values as low as negative 2, though. That northeast wind will keep blowing all day long. Tonight, mostly clear, and then a chance of snow down to about 11 degrees tonight. Tomorrow, snow mainly after 10 a.m. There is a winter storm watch in place for Friday night, and Saturday. 90% chance of snow on Friday with a high near 27. 100% chance of snow on Friday night, and 100% chance of precipitation on Saturday with a high near 34.
So what's the Super Bowl weather report? Is that indoor or outdoor this year?
Oh, gosh. You're really putting me on the spot.
I don't even know where it's being played. I know I'm going to watch it, but I don't know where it's being played.
You're asking the wrong person okay. In the room. We may have to turn on microphone 4 if he's got anything to say about that. I don't know where the Super Bowl is being played, or if it's an indoor or outdoor game.
I want a Madden game where John Madden, his favorite, he hated indoor arenas, and he hated AstroTurf, and he hated the wave.
Mm-hmm.
So he liked outdoor grass, and he preferred inclement weather.
Well, yeah, that's the way the game's supposed to be played, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, continuing that weekend weather forecast, it looks like it's going to be warming up come Sunday up to about 38 degrees, but still a strong chance of precipitation. So snow turning into rain as Sunday comes along. And then on Monday, a high of about 36 and could be either rain or snow. It's January, and I just realized something. Is it
Groundhog Day?
Yeah.
I never got that straight. Shadow, 6 more weeks. No shadow, 6 more weeks.
Shadow is if the groundhog sees its shadow, it gets scared and goes back in, and that's longer winter. So that I think is correct.
Okay. Yeah.
If it sees
its
shadow.
Cameron Rasmussen.
That's the voice of Cameron Rasmussen. He's the editor of the Sandpoint Reader, and he is our guest this morning. Welcome, Cameron.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
How did you like that really good segue?
That was great.
I just I wasn't sure if that was my cue to chime in, but I knew the answer. Mm-hmm. So at least I think I know the answer.
Do you know the answer about the Super Bowl?
I don't. Once again, I'm the wrong person to ask on that. I just, remembered that the Super Bowl was happening this week. So around Monday, actually. So I'm sure it's going to be a fun time, though. I'm planning on, watching it with some friends, and so we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Super Bowl 51, I'll have you know. Super Bowl 51, this just in, hot off the presses, takes place this Sunday at 3:30 p.m. at NRG Energy Stadium in Houston, Texas, between the New England Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons. And Energy Stadium will be, let's find out if that's an indoor stadium or not. It's the sort of partial, I think.
They can open it and close it.
Yeah. It's a multi-purpose stadium in Houston, Texas, in the United States, a seating capacity of 71,795. Total area of 19, 1,900,000 square feet, and the stadium is home of the Houston Texans, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, the Texas Bowl, the USA national soccer team when they play their host international soccer matches, and many other
events. You go.
Yeah.
By some weird twist of fate, I actually knew that about the retractable roof because we did an article in this week's Reader, which is coming out today, about the Super Bowl halftime show and its past controversies and things like that. And, you know, while I was researching that article, I saw that Lady Gaga was thinking about doing some kind of aerial stunt or something like that for this week's Super Bowl halftime show. And they were talking about the retractable roof. So it's funny how these little bits of information come your way. Yeah,
that's right. It is a retractable fabric roof. The roof mechanism consists of two large panels that split apart at the 50-yard line, lying over and above each end zone when fully retracted.
Huh.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's grass or artificial. I'm betting grass.
You are not short of questions today, are you, Carrie? I'll fill you in on that one as soon as I know.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, Cameron is here not to talk about the Super Bowl, not to give any sports statistics or anything like that, but just got back from what I'm guessing is the most extensive. Oh, how do you say this? When a paper sends a reporter to an offsite location.
It's doing a bit of correspondence.
I suppose
you could,
so.
You could say that.
I'm guessing that's the furthest the paper has sent a correspondent thus far, or at least for a period of time.
Yeah, we've taken a few trips to do stories around the region. Farthest that we've gone is to Boise so far. So this is quite a distance.
You went to Washington, D.C. for the inaugural and the March the following day.
That's correct. So I was in Washington, D.C. for just over a week. Got to use the time to, you know, talk to people who were in the area. I met with our senator, Jim Risch. He was kind enough to give me some time in a very busy week. And so we had a really good conversation about Scotchman Peaks, which, as you know, he's sponsoring the bill that would enshrine the Scotchman Peaks as wilderness in Idaho. And then on Friday of that week, it was the inauguration of President Donald Trump. And the next day, it was the Women's March, they were both very dynamic and very crowded events. It's a strange experience for a person ill used to very, very packed crowds to have both of those in one weekend. So, yeah, it was fun.
So chronologically, you left, and I liked it. I'm having a visual. Okay, so you left Sandpoint at what, 2 in the morning?
I did, yes. So it was a funny sort of experience because what happened was I and some friends went to see the Viggo Mortensen hosted screening of Captain Fantastic at the Panda Theater, and then just about a few hours later, it was time to head out to the train station because I had made the decision that I wanted to take one leg of the trip on the train going across the country by rail. And so once the movie was done, it was time to, you know, get all the final preparations in line and head to the train station. And at 2 o'clock in the morning or thereabouts anyway, I think the train was a little late, jumped on board and that began a 52-hour trip, across the country by rail, which was, that was quite the experience in itself.
Were you traveling, were you just in coach? Did you have a sleeper car?
No, I just took coach. Now I've done fairly long train trips before. I actually really like the train. I've never done a real cross country trip like this before, but I find that if the train that you're on is not particularly busy, it is a very comfortable experience to just sit in coach. And, you know, trains as opposed to airplanes allow much greater freedom of movement. So you never feel too cramped or anything like that. And, you know, provided that it's not an especially busy train, which for most of my trip was the case, you have a whole seat that you can kind of curl up on. And that's actually, you know, it's not going to be the most comfortable night's sleep you've ever had, but it's certainly functional. So, yeah.
So where'd you see the sun come up?
Oh, man. I saw the first day I saw the sun come up in central Montana. So that was, yeah. That was, I saw the sunrise. And then when I was really paying attention, I noticed that I was close to have her. So, yeah, that was when my first full day on the train began.
The train is, it's interesting that they've, it's a bit of a commuter train now. Not as much, but with all the work going on in North Dakota, or that has been in the last few years, it kind of transformed from something that mainly college students and retirees took as a mode of transportation, people not in a hurry to get anywhere. It became the most efficient way of getting to and from North Dakota.
Absolutely. And that's how I've used the train, you know, many times in the past. For time after high school, I lived in Portland, Oregon. And that was a really convenient way to get from the city to my hometown of Libby, Montana. Just so when there is, you know, really bad winter weather going on here, and I don't think it's exactly prudent to drive, I oftentimes take the train to go back home for things like Christmas or that sort of thing. So, yeah, those short burst trips are really cheap and they're really, you know, convenient. You know, I think that most people are somewhat cowed by the idea of being on the train for about 52 hours, you know, but for me, it was something that I just wanted to do because it's really a unique vantage point and a kind of a fun way to see the country, to travel by train. And you can go and sit in the observer car, and you have all sorts of outlets and things like that to do work or keep yourself occupied, and you can just kind of watch the country go by. It's a very pleasant experience, I find.
So I'm wondering if there was any real emotional component to riding the train, and I mean, it kind of makes me almost tear up talking about it, but riding the train and you're going to a really significant event and you're on the train and you see the sun coming up in Montana. Mm-hmm. And does that kind of tear at your heart a little bit, or
it does a little bit, because you know I've got quite a history of travel. It's sort of built into who I am, and so I tend to attach, you know, a lot of sentimentality to it. And in fact, it's a sort of a funny image that you bring up, because I remember taking the train without getting too much into my family background. I ended up doing a lot of traveling in Eastern Europe with my mom and dad because of the work that they did. And I remember a similar situation, you know, seeing the sun come up on a train in a trip when I was a teenager. I'm trying to remember where we were traveling to. I think it was to Poland. So yeah, it's got a lot of emotional sort of connotation for me, it's definitely a one of a kind experience.
I feel like the train, I like to take it back when I go to my birthplace in Minnesota, and for some reason, getting on a plane and flying a great distance it doesn't even feel real. You get out and it doesn't feel, when you can see it go by at a relatively understandable rate of speed, when you get there, you feel like you've actually made the journey, mm-hmm. as opposed to just step in the door and out the door is something artificial to me. It doesn't drive with my old school sensibilities, I guess.
It made for an interesting contrast, I might add, as well, because I flew back actually after a few days in Boston. So I flew up to Boston and then I flew back to Spokane, and it's interesting to see things from very different vantage points. Although I do have to say that it was actually very cool to get those few glimpses of the National Mall from the air after spending so much time there on foot. So I thought that was an interesting experience as well.
Were there other travelers on the train going to Washington for this event?
Not that I talked to. So what happened was, the majority of my time was spent on a train from Sandpoint to Chicago. And that was a very sparsely occupied train. Now, once I boarded my train from Chicago to Washington, D.C., that was much more heavily occupied. It was a full train, much less comfortable, by the way, to sleep in those circumstances. So all the recommendations that I just gave about, you know, overnight train travel are very, very much contingent on whether you're sitting next to someone or not. All that being said, I did talk to a few people that were heading to Washington, D.C., obviously, you know, from Chicago, but no one that I talked to was heading there for the inauguration. They were just trying to get back, you know, for work or what have you. So, yeah, it was definitely I'm sure that there must have been some people on that train that were going there, but not anyone that I talked to.
So isn't Chicago the origination of the Empire Builder? It starts from Chicago and then comes out to...
Yeah, I think so. So yeah. That is the end point of the Empire Builder on the one end. And then on the west end, it branches off to Seattle and Portland.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what were you still on BNSF when you went from Chicago to Washington, D.C.?
Well, Amtrak.
I mean, Amtrak.
Yeah, Amtrak.
Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. So that was the they handled everything. And it's very much like a flying experience, except without a lot of the security headaches that come with flying. Security is still relatively uninvolved with Amtrak. And now, you know, I don't know whether that makes you feel better or worse about going on a train, but for me, I think it's great because you just step on, you get to your seat, and it's such a an easy experience. So you know, I really appreciate that. There's no bag checks or anything like that. So it's you can not worry so much about having a full-size tube of toothpaste in your toiletry bag.
So what's the name of the station in Washington, D.C. when you pull in?
It's the Union Station.
It is Union Station?
Much like Chicago, which is also the Union Station. And I'm sure a train historian can give some sort of insight to why so many major stations are called the Union Station.
Right.
That's an interesting question.
And that Union Station, is it or is it not the station that has the Chihuly sculptures in it? Or is that the one in...
Oh, I'm not entirely sure.
I just saw a thing on some feed I was reading, NPR, I think, about a bunch of Dale Chihuly installations.
That's entirely possible because it seems like every building in Washington, D.C. also functions as some sort of museum or houses some just absolutely amazing things, even if it's a perfectly functional building that serves, you know, some sort of government purpose. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I didn't really explore the Union Station. I was, and on top of that, when I arrived in Washington, D.C., it was Martin Luther King Day.
Oh, wow.
So,
Rainy, right? That was a very rainy day?
No, not when I arrived. Okay. In Washington, D.C., the day that I arrived, it was very, you know, mild weather. In fact, you know, for the most part, the weather was decent all the time that I was there. I did get a little bit of rain the next day on Tuesday, to the point where the one souvenir that I picked up was a umbrella from the National Archives. So, yeah, I like my souvenirs to have some sort of utility, so that worked out. After that, it was fairly good weather. A little bit of rain during the inauguration, but it never really amounted to more than a sprinkle. I did have to wipe my phone off a couple of times to keep taking notes, but other than that, it was not terrible rain. And then really the worst day, and it was a very bad day, was the Monday after the inauguration and the Women's March. And that was just extreme winds and terrible downpour. I was trying to get to the African American History and Culture Museum, and I got pretty drenched on my way over there. So, yeah, that was not the most fun walk ever.
So, was this your first trip to Washington, D.C.?
No, I have been to Washington, D.C. one time, maybe about 12 or 13 years ago.
Okay.
So, I was a kid at the time.
Uh-huh.
And this was a trip that I was much more invested in, having gone through school and taken hours and hours of history courses, and just being a much more, you know, enriched person from, I guess, what I was when I was a kid. I definitely appreciated the experience a lot more as an adult, and I would definitely encourage anybody who has not been to Washington, D.C., since they were a kid, maybe on a school trip or something like that, to make sure that they get out there. It's also, by the way, a very affordable vacation because all the museums and everything that is managed by the federal government that you're going to want to go check out, it's all free. So, yeah, just pay your way. And really, you just have to kind of worry about food and lodging, which I was lucky enough to avoid. At least the lodging part, since I was staying with a college friend.
Nice, mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I just heard Chris Matthews was talking on his show the other day about that fact that, you know, what an affordable trip to go to Washington, D.C., because everything's free to go into.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You are listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is The Morning Show with Jack and Carrie, and we're in the studio with Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader. They're just back from his... They're far-flung correspondent to the inaugural and the Women's March, not to mention editor of the Sandpoint Reader. Did you meet any? You mentioned Jim Risch, of course. You got to meet with him, but did you see any other Idahoans while you were out in Washington, D.C.?
You know, I was kind of trying to. The deal with that is that it, I was not anticipating how difficult it was going to be to arrange things during the inauguration week, and to top it all off, I really didn't anticipate how difficult it was going to be walking around and getting from one place to another on the day of the inauguration itself, and so. I did meet with Jim Risch. That was a great meeting. He was, I think I was booked for 10 minutes and we ended up talking for close to a half hour. So he was very generous with his time and I very much appreciated that. He also provided me with tickets to the inauguration. So that was very kind of him as well. I was going to meet with Raul Labrador because he was hosting an open house after the inauguration. And so I'd been informed of this and was welcome to drop by and have a few words with the representative. But the thing of it was after the inauguration, pretty much everything around the National Mall was locked down. And I could not for the life of me figure out how to get around all the barricades and make my way to, I believe it's the Longworth building, where the many representatives have their offices. So I was just completely befuddled by how to route myself when all of these streets closed down, and ultimately just gave up. I couldn't. I was like a half hour before the thing was supposed to end, and I was just so frustrated that I said, "Well, I guess I'll have to talk to Representative Labrador another time." So, yeah.
So I'm not taking you with me to the maze, yeah, when it's the corn maze. Count on you to be the guide.
Yeah, I've often been mocked for my lack of a sense of direction or just general navigation skills. But you know what? I challenge anyone to make sense of the National Mall on Inauguration Day. It's quite a baffling situation that they've got set up there.
I'll bet.
You know, for good reason. It is the inauguration of the president, and they're going to take every security measure in the books. So, yeah.
So could you, how close were you, or what was your visual of the actual swearing in?
So, yeah, that was a sort of a weird situation. And I never quite figured out what happened here. So the tickets that Senator Risch gave me were blue access tickets, which is fairly good access. It's standing access. And this is maybe a couple of levels back. And I think it was the area directly behind the seated access. The problem was, once again, people were really confused by all of these barricades, and so the area that I found myself in was trapped behind a metal barricade when signs seemed to direct people to keep on moving forward for blue access. And I don't know whether that was just, you know, the number of blue ticket holders was too great and things just kind of slowed down and stopped where I landed. But it was, you know, there were a lot of people around me that were annoyed because they felt like they weren't getting as close as they should have been. But I had a pretty solid view of the Capitol building. I really couldn't see much of anyone in particular as far as the ceremony was concerned, but I there were television screens, or not television, but just kind of video screens,
monitors,
yeah, put up where they were, you know, covering all of the speakers and whatnot, and so I could kind of see one of those, and it wasn't too great of a concern of mine because the main thing that I wanted to experience was just what was the crowd like, you know, what was the general mood like, and that was a really interesting experience.
So why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, so in general, everything went very smoothly on the inauguration day. As you might have read, there were a lot of media reports that were going on about just how the people handling security for the day were, you know, very concerned about keeping the peace and making sure that all of the Trump supporters were not going to have any violent interactions with any of the protesters that were in Washington, D.C., because there were plenty of those, too. And so the closest thing that I encountered that seemed like maybe a sort of a dicey situation was when the inauguration wrapped up and everybody was, you know, very tightly packed and sort of shuffling out of the area. And right in the street, all of these masses of Trump supporters ended up coming face-to-face, you know, to the degree that you could get face-to-face with really anyone in that crowd, with a bunch of protesters. And so that seemed like it was, you know, people were getting a little bit aggravated, but it didn't amount to much more than a lot of people on the protester side yelling their things, and then the Trump people, the Trump supporters, started a USA chant, and that was all it really amounted to. So yeah, it in the balance was a very peaceful day.
So immediately around you, did you have conversation where people were from? Where people, you like your neighbors in line? Where
yeah. From? So for the most part, the people that I talked to hadn't traveled too far away. I think one guy had come from Virginia, and you know, he had access to tickets, and so he was just, he sort of came on a whim. He was essentially saying, "Well, I can do this, so I probably should." And I do know that there were plenty of other cases where people were traveling from, you know, long distances away. So but that was the gentleman that I talked to the most in the course of that whole event. And so yeah, it was, a lot of people were really happy with Trump's inauguration speech, which you know, you might expect, because everyone or close to everyone in that crowd were this was a great day for them. So they were not happy, and one of the things that that I'm always interested in when I'm in a crowd environment like that is, you know, how do they respond to people that they're not necessarily a fan of. And so, you know, you got some boos when, for instance, they announced Hillary Clinton coming alongside Bill Clinton when they were bringing in the former presidents. And you got some, the biggest thing that happened was when Chuck Schumer spoke before the inauguration. That was, people were not really interested in hearing what he had to say. So there was the point where the booing was so intense in the crowd that I was in that that you couldn't even really hear anything from all the loudspeakers and that sort of thing. But on the whole, you know, that was probably the most contentious moment. And on the whole, it was a decent crowd, a crowd that was in very good spirits, and they were, you know, they were happy to be there and happy to talk to people. So yeah, that was my experience anyway.
A lot of red hats.
Scattered red hats. Definitely, it was. If you take a look at the aerial shots that came out, it's interesting to see like just the speckles of red and that sort of thing. Mm. But yeah. Definitely in my area, there were a number.
Did you go to any inaugural balls?
I didn't. No. I skipped those. The only thing that I attempted to go to, of course, was the open house. And as we already discussed, that didn't really work out too well for me. So, yeah. But it was fine. It was interesting also to kind of follow just how, you know, traffic was impacted and things like that as Donald Trump moved from one area to another as the night went on. So after I was done kind of doing my reporting for the day, I spent the rest of my day with my college friend and his friends, and And it was a funny experience because, you know, as we were grabbing an Uber from place to place, traffic would really slow down in one part of the city. And people were observing that, well, this is the next spot in Donald Trump's sort of schedule for the day. So this is probably what's happening, you know. So it's definitely a strange thing to be able to observe those ripple effects.
I'd like to take a little break here, a little musical break. We're about halfway through the hour and then some, as well as update you on coverage of an ongoing event that we're following closely here at KRFY. This out of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, an official release. Punxsutawney Phil, the seer of seers, prognosticator of all prognosticators, was awakened from his burrow to the cheers of his thousands of faithful followers. In groundhog ease, he directed the president and the inner circle to his prediction scroll, which reads, "At Gobbler's Knob on Groundhog Day, we celebrate a worldwide holiday. It's mighty cold weather you've been braving. Is it more winter or is it spring that you're craving? Since you've been up all night and starting to toddle, I, Punxsutawney Phil, shall not dawdle. My faithful followers, I could clearly see a beautiful, perfect shadow of me. 6 more weeks of winter, it shall be." 6 more weeks of winter, according to the groundhog. It's also Graham Nash's 75th birthday today, born on this date in 1942, of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and the Hollies, and also a solo artist. Here's a little song by just Graham Nash himself called Be Yourself. We'll be back with Cameron Rasmussen, impressions from the Women's March as well. Stay tuned to KRFY. The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. Jack and Carrie here in the studio with Cameron Rasmussen, the editor of the Sandpoint Reader, who just got back from our nation's capital, where he observed the inauguration of the president as well as the Women's March the following day. And let's talk a little bit about that. It was quite a scene, as we were just talking about during the break. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you had some troubles with navigation already. Were you waylaid by the crowd, or was it the security or the police element there, or just a little bit of both, I guess? Or I don't know. What was the main confusion?
So now you're talking about obstacle. The Women's March?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So The Women's March was, it was much easier to kind of navigate than the inauguration itself, simply because all of the tightly controlled pathways from the that were put up during the inauguration weren't an issue the following day. The real thing that kind of directed where you were going to end up heading was just the flow of the crowd itself. And now, on the day of the Women's March, I happened to be with my friends. And so that made, they've lived in Washington, D.C. now for several years. And so they're very much accustomed to getting around there. They have a fairly good sense of how to get from one place to another. And I mostly followed their lead for the course of that experience. And that was a good thing because they were able to find shortcuts to kind of weave us through. And we ended up landing in a place that was really convenient. Now, I'm not sure where it was situated in terms of my position versus the stage where all of the speakers for the Women's March were doing their thing. So, but I did have access to a really nice video screen where I could see everything going on very clearly just through that, and the audio was all great, so that was no trouble at all. For the most part, it was just an experience of standing for several hours while the rally was going on, in basically a shoulder to shoulder environment, just packed along these large Washington, D.C. streets.
So what time of day did the crowd start building?
So we started gathering at about 9 o'clock. And I think, you know, there were a lot of people that got there very early. I was, once again, you know, just following my friend's lead. And I know that one of the people that I was with, she had to meet up with a group beforehand to kind of coordinate with them first. And so by the time that we got into the place that we spent the next several hours, which was close to the Smithsonian Castle, the very first Smithsonian building, that now is kind of like the Smithsonian Museum about the Smithsonian. Yeah, that's where the founder of the organization is buried, or where his ashes are interred and everything like that. So I was close to that area, and by the time that we got situated, the rally was already well underway. And I think it was Gloria Allred that was speaking by the time that we got situated. So
although it's titled the Women's March, what was your feeling about participation by men in that event?
Oh,
you have a sense of?
Yeah, it was my experience was definitely that the crowd was largely women. But you know, there were a lot of men there too. There's a fairly good mix of types of people there. It was my experience was it was a very friendly crowd. People were very polite. They were not, there was obviously a lot of bumping into each other and jostling about, and everyone was very apologetic trying to get by and that sort of thing. So it was a funny experience in that way. Once again, very peaceful, not a lot of incidents one way or another. So, I definitely enjoyed that aspect of it.
Did you find yourself, or I know there were some congestion issues. Was there actually much marching going on, or was it mostly standing?
Yeah. So, as the rally progressed, and I'm not sure what exactly happened with the rally, but they went way over their scheduled time. And so people were starting to get really restless and wanting to start moving because, it was cold and people had been standing for hours, and they were kind of getting frustrated when the people on the stage were like, "Are you guys ready to march?" Everybody would get really excited. And then they'd be like, "Well, we just have a few more speakers for you," and people were getting a little restless. But finally, when people just started marching, at first it was very much kind of a shuffle. You could only move a couple of inches at a time, and And I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Let me just interject right there, kind of a similar thing locally, because the program locally was supposed to run from 11 to 12, and the speakers went over, and the Panada wasn't able to hold everybody who wanted to attend, and so people were out on the street or in the little theater. So at noontime, the natives were restless out front because we had told them noontime we're going to march, you know. So then there were like two separate waves of people. The people that were on the street and in the theater made the first wave, but they were able to stretch their legs when they walked here.
Right.
And then after the final speakers, the second wave came from the theater. So a similar thing, that frustration of, well, hey, yeah, we're listening to you and that's all is good, but we want to march. You
yeah.
Know? So,
yeah. And you know, now that I think about it, I think that I got the name of the, I think I misidentified the first speaker that we arrived at, but the thing of it was
Gloria was that, Steinem.
Yeah. Steinem. That's who we're going for.
Yeah.
But the thing of it was, is that, the number of speakers that they had arranged for the event was, I mean, it seemed to me that they obviously had so many people that wanted to participate that they were kind of struggling to fit everybody in. And so I think that, that's what accounted for things kind of going over, but, and then also people were, they had to start getting very aggressive in terms of cutting people down once they ran over on their time. I think Michael Moore, for instance, had to be cut off by Ashley Judd because he was just getting a little too carried away and going over his time. So
the hook. That's when you need the hook.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, but. It was definitely an interesting experience to be there and have such very, you know, high profile speakers lined up all throughout the day. If you read my takeaway from the weekend, which I think published last week, I was, you know, really impressed with Van Jones and the comments that he had to say about, you know, conservatives and liberals trying to find common ground and a sense of mutual respect, you know, even as they, you know, very much disagree on the issues. I think that's a pretty important message to emphasize right now when it seems like we've kind of lost any sense of respectful discourse, you know, between the two wings of our political ideology. So, yeah. On the whole, it was, even if people were getting a little bit restless, it was a lot of fun, you know, and it was an interesting experience.
I'm looking at your photo here. This is obviously we can't share it on the radio, but this is people all the way back through here, it looks like.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, just as far as the eye can see looking down.
Yeah. And that was one of the most remarkable moments of the entire the entire day was when. This was after my friend Connor and I had split away from the march itself. And we were trying to find some place that would serve us food, you know, that wasn't completely packed. And we happened upon the street where we were able to get a little bit of elevation. And that was maybe one of the most impressive things that I've seen in terms of the crowd, because I don't think I've ever seen that many people just, you know, it was people as far as the eye could see, you know. And you can kind of get a sense from that photograph how it stretches from you know, a relatively close up shot all the way to where the crowd just becomes an indiscernible blob. And yeah, and that was that was definitely the day where dealing with the crowds was a real issue, because you would move from street to street and it just would not let up. Now, that wasn't a problem for whatever reason that I had on the day of the inauguration, but on the Women's March, my friend Connor and I were trying to get from one street to another, and he was thinking, okay, just around the corner, we're going to get a straight shot to where we need to go. And it would just be the same situation. You know, we'd just be packed, trying to shuffle along. And that was quite a crazy experience. I've never had that sort of experience before.
I think my reaction at that point might be, darn, why didn't I stay home and just watch this on television?
Yeah.
It would be like, how do you get to a bathroom?
It's easy to feel that way, but at the same time, it's certainly a one-of-a-kind.
Sure.
A one-of-a-kind moment that you're going to remember for a long, long time. And I can guarantee that, I doubt I'll be forgetting this anytime soon. So, yeah, it was a wild time.
So besides the folks who were part of the speaking program, did you see interwoven into the crowd any politicians? Or I know I saw a picture on the news of John Kerry and his dog walking through at one point. Have any glimpses like that?
No. Very well might have brushed up along someone of note in that entire time, but it seemed to me that everyone was very much concerned with making sure that that they were getting to where they were going. And for me, I was somewhat paranoid about losing the people that I had arrived with, and so I was very much focused on making up distance when we got a few people between us, and making sure that I didn't get lost in the shuffle. I know that they were there. I wish that I had the opportunity to pay closer attention, but I was very much concerned with self-interest at that point.
So in listening to the conversations around you, were people hopeful? What was the sense that you got of the purpose in people being there and how they hoped their presence was going to impact the future?
So, yeah, on the whole, I would say that it was a very... it was a very optimistic event. It was something that that people brought a lot of good cheer along to. Now, there were definitely several moments where I saw some pretty profound anger, people who were very upset about the election and very fearful of the future. But I would say that the defining sense of day was maybe not necessarily an optimism, but definitely an energized sort of commitment to taking a look at the bright side of things and also getting involved in everything from keeping your congressmen and women informed of your opinion to running for office yourself. So that was definitely the message that it seemed like most people were trying to get across. And there was sort of a festive atmosphere throughout the entire day that it almost felt like going to sort of like a carnival or something, especially with all the strange costumes that I saw along the way.
What kind of costumes?
Oh, man. Well, of course, there were all the hats. I saw like a whole group that was sort of like a marching band. Apparently, somebody brought a llama in. I missed the llama, but there was a llama somewhere.
The point of the llama was
up for debate. But I guess adding a llama to the situation is always welcome. That's fun. Yeah.
Funny.
We are running low on time. The photo we were talking about a minute ago of the march and other coverage of the march, I'm sure, is available on your website. the reader.
That's right.
And upcoming, will there be more, or are we expecting more articles about this in this week's, next week's paper?
Yeah, so I'm planning on doing a travelogue sort of article, just kind of, you know, talking a little bit, as I just did, about my experiences, but in a more entertaining kind of way, and in something with a little bit more, you know, literary flourish to it, as opposed to the relatively straight-laced reporting that I did on the first couple of dispatches that I sent back. So, yeah, I'm going to have that in maybe next week's paper, or we'll see what happens. The papers are sort of a flexible sort of thing, so, you know, you have to be able to push things off if you have to. But that's my goal, and I intend to have a little bit of fun with that.
Cool.
Well, hey, Cameron, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, we're thank you for having me.
About done. Always a pleasure to read what you bring to us here in the Reader, and what you send in from far-flung locales.
And now his byline can be Cameron Rasmussen, Washington correspondent.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
We've run fresh out of time. There's always more to talk about, but it's going to have to wait till next week. Thank you for tuning in for the morning show. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long after that. For Carrie Logan, this is Jack Peterson saying good morning.